radio.org.nz/greenplanet.
Hi, and welcome to Radio Gaga at Planet FM 104.6, sharing life and experiences from disabled people, by disabled people, for disabled people. Each week, we bring you stories based around our multiple abilities. You don't have to wait any longer to listen to insightful views, news, and reviews from around your community. We invite you to join us as we show you our community. Radio Gaga wants you to understand our dreams for a truly inclusive Auckland.
I'm Anna, your host for today. In this week's program, Paralympian Liam Malone takes out the Disabled Sportsperson of the Year accolade at the 54th Halberg Awards. We speak to Sean Robinson from the Mental Health Foundation about how to better support people in the community living with mental illness. We will have a spoken word piece from a local poet, Matt Nelmatua, who lives with cerebral palsy. And finally, we'll speak to Va'a Filimoni, who is the sole disabled woman involved with Physical Disability Rugby New Zealand. Thanks for tuning in. Now here's this week's current affairs story.
New Zealand's very own blade runner Liam Malone has taken out the Disabled Sportsperson of the Year accolade at the 54th Halberg Awards. The 23-year-old Nelson sprinter reminisced on his difficult journey as he accepted the award in front of New Zealand sporting royalty at the Vector Arena. He says, "It was not so long ago that I was a young boy crying in my room wishing that I had real legs. In an attempt to lift my spirits, my dad said one day someone will build you legs that will allow you to run faster than your friends. In 2016, that day came true. Thank you, Dad." End quote. Malone's sensational debut at the Rio Paralympic Games last year saw him take the gold medal in the 200-metre and 400-metre T44 track events and the silver medal in the 100 metres. His winning time of 46.2 seconds in the 400-metre final was just 0.11 outside of New Zealand's able-bodied record. Malone broke two Paralympic records previously held by South African sprinter Oscar Pistorius. The Disabled Sportsperson of the Year category was hotly contested, with Malone beating fellow Paralympians Anna Grimaldi, Mary Fisher, and six-time Paralympic gold medalist Sophie Pascoe. Pascoe had previously won the category four times and took out the Leadership Award this year. The Halberg Awards annually recognise New Zealand's top sporting achievements. This is Ripu Bardia reporting for Radio Gaga. Now we have the song Say You Won't Let Go by James Arthur, followed by an interview with Sean Robinson from the Mental Health Foundation.
Over your shoulder, for a minute I was stone cold sober. I pulled you closer to my chest, and you asked me to stay over. I said I already told you, I think that you should get some rest. I knew I loved you then, but you never know. Cause I played it cool when I was scared of letting go. Breakfast in bed, I'll bring you coffee with a kiss on your head. I'll take the kids to school, wave them goodbye, and I'll thank my lucky stars for that night. When you looked over your shoulder, for a minute I forget that I'm older. I wanna dance with you right now. And you look beautiful as ever, and I swear that every day you'll get better. You make me feel this way so. a ghost. Cause you were always there for me when I needed you most. I'm gonna love you till my lungs give out. I promise till death we part, like in our vows. So I wrote this over you. Now everybody knows that it's just you and me till we play along.
Welcome back. We now have Sean Robinson from the Mental Health Foundation on the line with us.
My first question is, what is the main mission of the Mental Health Foundation?
Our mission is to create a New Zealand society in which everybody is supported to be able to feel good and function well in their lives. That's really the definition of positive mental health. There are a lot of things that we need to do to achieve that. Some of that is about promoting the kinds of behaviours and support that people need to have that kind of positive experience of mental well-being in their lives. But it also includes being advocates and commentators and trying to be part of developing the range of services that people need when they do have times of mental and emotional distress, and make sure that those services are really focused on people's recovery.
Okay, no, that's excellent. So just going off what you said about services, what do you think about the current state, I guess, about the kind of support and services that are in place to help people with mental health?
I think it's I think it's a sort of a mixed picture. I think it is really important to see how far New Zealand has come, and it has come, you know, a really long way in a positive direction. You know, we've come from some really horrific, destructive services in the past. And I personally know people that were in some of the institutions that existed in the 70s and early 80s and before
that. Well, of course, yeah.
And they were, you know, they were not places of healing. They were places of abuse and destruction. Now we've moved way beyond that. We're doing, you know, a lot of very effective work now in the community. There's a lot of acknowledgement of the voice of people who are living with the experience of mental illness or mental distress. There's a lot of, you know, peer input into services, you know, we're many things that are working really well. And yeah. I think, you know, we need to remember how far we've come. Having said that, there's a huge mountain to climb still. I think in some ways, as our communities and society have become more aware of mental health issues, both positive and negative, and perhaps somewhat more accepting of being able to talk about mental distress, then in fact the demand for these services, for support services, has gone up. And so we are starting to see some real pressure on services with massive caseloads, you know, and cracks are starting to form in those services. And I guess on the positive side, you know, we have governments and politicians who do acknowledge this problem. So we're not in a situation where the minister or the government is pretending that this is not the case. So the Minister of Health has acknowledged that the demand for services has gone up 70% in 10 years. Yeah. And the government has initiated some work looking at, you know, what are the next steps? What, how can we take the services in New Zealand to the next level? But we've yet to see what the results of that are going to be, and we are seeing every day, you know, some of the tragic consequences of poor practice that still exists or overloaded services.
Yeah. Do you think the government is doing enough to, at the moment, to help people with mental health issues?
Well, I think they can never do enough.
Okay.
So my answer would have to be no. I think there is a lot more that the government could do. I think we're seeing a lot of DHB services, you know, under real strain. You know, we really need to be looking at the adequacy of the funding that's going to those services.
Okay.
But also I think there need to be much more focus on recovery-led services, peer-led services in the community, supporting GPs who are often the first, you know, clinical point of support. And even before that, a very important part, which is very undercooked in New Zealand, and that is really equipping communities to be the first line of support. You know, I myself live with bipolar, and I know that when I was in my times of real distress, you know, the first people I looked to for support were my family and my friends.
Exactly.
And they were, in many cases, you know, not equipped. They were frightened of what, you know, I was experiencing. They didn't know how to support me. They were kind of scared of getting in over their heads. Now, luckily, I had enough people that kind of just had enough confidence to kind of stand beside me, which in many cases is all someone needs. They need someone to kind of be there with them through the experience. And that, you know, I was lucky there. But, you know, I believe that it's very important that we equip communities to be able to kind of ask that basic question, you know, are you okay? And when they're concerned about somebody, and to, you know, to have the confidence to be able to then, you know, stay with someone if the answer is no, I'm actually, you know, struggling. So there's a lot of work that can be done there. There's also a lot of work that needs to be done to promote the, you know, the kind of positive stuff, the stuff that actually prevents people getting into distress. And, you know, there are many lifestyle changes that people can make that, just like you can affect your physical fitness and your, you know, your health through eating habits or not smoking or exercising, there are things that people can build into their lives that will make them more resilient. And we're doing not nearly enough to really promote those things.
That's really interesting. So I guess a lot of it could be, when you're talking about the community, is just like really raising awareness towards how to respond to people who've you know, these kind of issues, and like, so I guess raising awareness in the community is really an important thing.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond simply raising awareness. I think people need some training and some skills, and that, you know, we need to start getting that kind of, I guess, competence and confidence kind of really built in, you know, I mean, ideally, you know, right from schooling age, that people are better able to support one another and look out for one another. I mean, what we often find is that, say, for example, you know, at the kind of very emotive and extreme end of the mental health spectrum, when people are responding to issues around suicide, there are a lot of people say, well, we just need to talk about it more. In one sense, that's absolutely true, but in another sense, there are ways of talking about issues such as suicide, which are helpful, and there are ways that are really destructive.
That's really interesting.
You know, it's the number one thing really is to focus on you know, people being there in a non-judgmental way for other people.
Yeah.
But, for example, with suicide, it's very important to remember, and when the community is talking about these issues, that the vast majority of people who become so depressed or anxious or distressed that they might consider suicide survive.
You know? Okay.
And so it's a message of hope that needs to be there. It's also very important when, say, the media or anybody who might be doing, you know, schools programs or whatever else is talking about suicide, that they don't talk about methods that people have used to commit suicide. Because people who are vulnerable, and I, you know, again, I can use myself as an example. I have been at times, you know, in a suicidal state. And people that are vulnerable, you know, to be given some sort of concrete idea of how to act on those suicidal thoughts can actually be very dangerous. And, you know, unless the conversation around suicide, for example, is, you know, very heavily weighted towards hope and towards, you know, support and you, things can get better, because they do, you know, then, you know, then that it can be dangerous. So it's not just raising awareness, it's raising awareness in a way that really gives people the skills to support one another effectively.
No, that's great. So you were saying about, like, maybe even in schooling, just like teaching people, like, not simply saying, like, you know, be there for someone, but teaching them how to be there in, like, a really helpful way that isn't, you know, because isn't destructive.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think kind of sort of some basic awareness of mental health, both the positive and, you know, and the potential kind of indicators of when someone's struggling or when a person may be starting to get into depression or anxiety or something quite serious. You know, that sort of education at the school level would be very helpful. But, you know, also there are things, I mean, we've been involved in a program called Pause, Breathe, Smile, which we sort of work with an organization in the community that is focused on teaching school children some basic mindfulness skills. So skills about how to calm your mind, how to focus on what is happening right now. And then the name tells you the core technique. You know, how to pause, take a breath, focus on that, and smile at a time of stress. Now, building those kinds of habits into people's lives from the very beginning, you know, just will massively, you know, increase the mental well-being across the population.
Wow, that's incredible. Just like simply, just like programs like that at schooling level, I guess, can actually have like a really big difference across the board.
Absolutely, and you know, it's quite possible for New Zealand to, if you think about mental well-being as kind of like, I don't know, an asset that the whole country has. You know, we have, you know, we have a certain amount of fields that we can grow grass on to sort of have farms or whatever. Well, we also have a certain amount of mental and emotional well-being in New Zealand, and that well-being is an asset for our relationships, our families, our parenting of children, for us as people, you know, working and, you know, being able to produce things and you know, be really effective in the workspace, for our communities and how connected they are. If someone is feeling good and functioning well and able to cope with the ups and downs of life, then they're much more effective in every part of their life. Now, we as New Zealand, we can actually grow the amount of that well-being in our community. We can have more of that asset if we promote the kinds of skills, behaviours, ideas that build positive mental health, and that would flow on into every part of New Zealand society in a very positive way.
I mean, that's a really great way to put it, I think. I mean, Yeah, thanks so much. Like, that's brilliant. I think we're actually, like, we've been talking for quite a while, about 15 minutes now, so I'll probably have to wrap it up there. But
No worries.
That was really, really informative, and I just want to really thank you for your time, Sean. That's great, mate.
No worries. Well, one other thing I'll quickly say, which you might be able to, you know, pop in, is that, you know, these are not just nice ideas. This is actually based on a wealth of scientific research.
Yeah, of course.
You know, drawing on things like sports psychology, education psychology, organizational science, psychotherapy, and from this vast range of scientific exploration all points towards the same conclusions.
We hope you enjoyed that discussion. Now here's the song Bonfire Heart by James Blunt, followed by a spoken word piece by poet Matt Namatua, who has cerebral palsy.
Your mouth is a revolver, find bullets in the sky. Your love is like a soldier, loyal till you die. And I've been looking at the stars for a long, long time. I've been putting out fires all my life. Everybody wants a flame, they don't want to get burned. And today is our turn. Days like these lead to nights like this lead to love like ours. You light the spark in my bonfire heart. People like us, we don't need that much. Just someone that starts the spark in our bonfire hearts. This world is getting colder, strangers passing by. No one offers you a shoulder, no one looks you in the eye. But I've been looking at you for a long, long time. Just trying to break through, trying to make you mine. Everybody wants a flame, they don't want to get burned. Well, today is our turn. Like this lead to love like ours. You light the spark in my bonfire heart. People like us, we don't need that much. Just someone that starts the spark in our bonfire heart. We don't need that much. Just someone that starts the spark in our bonfire hearts. Days like these lead to nights like this lead to love like ours. You light the spark in my bonfire hearts.
I Need to Remember by Matt Namatua. I Need to Remember a kiss that surprised me, unexpected but beautiful, a moment I will never forget. Time stood still. A grace is beautiful development. Comfortable and safe in the arms. Questions no more. taking in the moment, never forgotten. Thank you.
Wow, that was some really beautiful poetry, Matt. Now I'm here with Va Filimoni, who is the only woman on the New Zealand Physical Disability Rugby League team.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Hi, everyone.
Hey, Va, so I'm really interested to learn about how you got involved in this sport and, I guess, just what it's like.
I got involved with it because it was something new and different, and because I wanted to get back into sport. So, obviously, I always up for a challenge, so I took it up.
Awesome. So, hey, could you maybe, just for the listeners, tell us a bit about your disability and how it, I guess, impacts you?
My one is cerebral palsy, but my one mainly affects my left side. So I can pretty much pass as an able body if people don't really notice until they look up very closely.
All right. So tell us a bit about the team, and I guess so you go to trainings and you're the only girl. So what's that like?
Training is really fun, and I love it because, you know, being the only disabled girl, and I train with another girl, but she's able-bodied, but it's good to have, like, a support team around you, so it's quite good to make history.
Yeah, I mean, that's really exciting. So how long has this sport been around for?
We've going to about 2 years, and we're on our third season.
That's really cool. So tell me a bit about... I guess how it works. Do you compete in Australia? I heard something about going over to Australia.
That's probably later in the year. It's still officially designed in New Zealand because mainly it came up from Oz, so Australia. So we play against each other and we're split in teams and we wear two different colour shorts. So I have to wear the red shorts because I only get touch.
Oh, okay.
And the ones that wear black can get tackled. But I'm annoyed because I can tackle, so I can't wear black shorts.
Interesting. So it's not a full contact sport. It's kind of like a mixture of, like, touch and tackle rugby.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of, like, original rugby league. Have you heard of Masters?
No, I'm not sure about that. Tell us a bit about that.
It's, like, a little bit of, like, touch and league, so we kind of break it up a bit. So it's like you can play tag, touch, and play. It's a contact sport, so you can have both.
No, I mean, that's really exciting, and I commend your, courage for just getting involved in that, and I'm sure it'll open a lot of doors for you.
Yeah, well, hopefully it does.
Well, thanks for speaking to me, and it's really interesting learning all about this sport.
Oh, all good, anytime. It's good to be back anyway.
Well, that pretty much wraps up our show for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and be sure to catch us same time next week.